Heck, what do you say you and me take a walk over to the tavern?
Let's pull up a chair.
A little something to eat.
Welcome to the Mouse and Castles.
Come on, Johnny, what are we waiting for?
This is a gathering place for fans of all things Disney. So sit back,
chow down,
have some sips, and chit-chat about the magical world created by Walt Disney.
For too long, I've been parched of thirst and unable to quench it.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mouse and Castle Podcast. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. So glad to have you back as we talk all things Disney, all things Mouse House. And it's some big news. I texted him this morning saying, hey, we got to do a show. It's Mr. Aaron Goins. Hey, man, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. Yeah, a little bit of magic back in my life.
You know who said
the potential for it?
Right? You know who's saying the word magic a lot was Bob Chapek on
yeah,
MSNBC.
That's true. He was.
He like ended every answer.
He's
like,
he's very on brand.
I felt bad, but I was just sitting there. I was like, the other Bob would have been smoother. Listen, he's brand new at it. Listen, talk about the worst time to become CEO of Disney.
Trial by fire.
Exactly. But no, it is reopening. That's what we're alluding to. I won't beat around the bush. Disney World has announced, they're rough, but in my view, surprisingly detailed reopening plan. And that's what this podcast episode is dedicated to. We're going to do a full breakdown and reflect with our thoughts and opinions about the announced reopening of Walt Disney World. Here we are, Aaron. First question. Is this sooner than you thought?
It's a little sooner than I thought. I was predicting like August was kind of my prediction in my head. And I think I had said it somewhere publicly, so you could probably fact check me. But August was my prediction when things would start to open at Disney World as far as parks go. And so July is earlier than I expected. But and I won't go in July, but it'll be interesting to see who does go in July.
I want to go into July, and I would if I could. I don't think I'll be... I am confined not to the government of Florida, nay, even the national government of these United States. I'm governed by the Uniform Code of Military Justice, so it's entirely up to my boss, my active duty squadron's policies as to when I can go. Because I fully intend... me and Savannah want to make the trip. We've talked about it. As soon as we... safely can and actually, you know, have permission to be able to do it since we're military. So that there's an added twist to it for us. But I think that question, that central question of just because it's open, do you go? That's the real question. And we're going to talk all about that, but let's actually hammer out some of the specifics here. Aaron, you did a great job kind of rounding up in our notes, the brass tack. So why don't you lay it on me? What are we looking at here?
Well, they did. So they have put out a proposed plan, and that's what I think people need to keep in mind.
Yes,
that although it is probably going to happen the way that they've laid it out, it's proposed and it is pending the county and state approval.
Yes,
so that's something to remember. But the dates, I mean, we got Magic Kingdom and Animal Kingdom are going to open first, and that's going to be July 11th, and then Epcot and Hollywood Studios will be July 15th. Curious about the why behind which ones they're opening first. I get Magic Kingdom. You would want that one probably to open first, but then Animal Kingdom is the other one. I don't know if maybe because of, you know, logistical reasons as far as like setting up all of the, you know, spacing and the cleanliness and, you know, cleaning it and stuff like that. Maybe Animal Kingdom is further along than the other two, but I don't know if you have any thoughts on why.
So I don't know the why in terms of I'd just be having to hazard a guess as far as which park opens first, but it does make sense to me that they would stagger the opening, because you know, Disneyland / California Adventure, that's going to be one thing where it's two parks relatively small right across from each other, but we're talking a lot of space, a lot of acreage, a lot of transportation, a lot of resorts. So it makes sense to me that they're going to do this in a staggered opening. So to me, it seems like they're just starting with the, I mean, really, the what are the current two biggest parks? Magic Kingdom and Animal Kingdom. Although, I guess Hollywood Studios, before the pandemic hit, was probably runner-up second. But because of Avatar, I guess Animal Kingdom, it propelled Animal Kingdom into second place, I know, in terms of attendance. So they're starting, I guess, with their heavy hitters. And I think it's just a chance for the system to breathe a little bit as they prepare to let the crowds in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can just run down some of this stuff and then just stop me.
Yeah, yeah.
If you have commentary to make.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there are going to be attendance limits. Yep. More on that later. There parades and fireworks, kind of the big crowd magnets where you see people really bunching together. That stuff's not coming back right away.
Yes.
And all they're saying is it will return at a later date. So there's no kind of set timeline for when you would see that stuff return. I know we had speculated that maybe they would still do like fireworks, but kind of space people out or have like taped off areas for people. But it sounds like they're not ready to take on that challenge yet.
Yeah, which probably coincides with the sooner opening date. Because the question here is, I really think what this is showing us is that they're opening as soon as they can, and they're willing to compromise some of what historically I don't think they would have compromised in any other circumstance in terms of the guest experience in the parks, but they just have to. And a lot of that just comes to operability and profitability, I think. It's just a financial reality because they are opening a few weeks behind Universal. Mm-hmm. And SeaWorld, which comes up. I think this is a great time. I'm going to play a little clip. Disney's CEO, we were talking about at the beginning, Bob Chapek, was on CNBC, and they interviewed him. I grabbed a couple of sound bites here that kind of relate to what we're talking about. Let's take a listen as far as he's talking about this exact topic of crowd capacity.
I think that, you know, the Walt Disney Company's got a long history of being very responsible. We were the first attraction-based group in Florida to close initially when COVID first hit. And I think there's a certain amount of trust in the brand and trust in the way that we operate that we'll do it responsibly and do it on behalf of both, not only our guests, but our cast.
You just outlined a number of different steps that you're going to be taking to make the park safe, which sound very expensive. I mean, we're talking about plexiglass, obviously the limited capacity. At what level of capacity do you expect this park to be profitable?
Well, I had said earlier that we would not open a park unless we could at least cover our variable cost of operating and make a contribution towards fixed costs and overhead. And that is the case at Walt Disney World as well. So we believe that we'll be at least able to cover our costs of opening up our parks, but at the same time work then incrementally as either we become better at putting more folks inside the park or the guidelines loosen up a little bit. So we'll slowly but surely make baby steps towards improving the number of guests that we can accommodate in our parks while, again, always ensuring that we open up responsibly.
Make no mistake, Aaron, when I hear him talk, this is a stopgap. This is the fire extinguisher that they're breaking out here. He's literally explicitly saying we're opening up the parks at such a limited capacity with, as we just talked about, a limited guest experience, because if we can at least just get enough people in here to run at operating costs so they're not losing money. I mean, that's kind of what it sounds like he's saying. Am I being dramatic here?
No, I think it's true, and I think they want to. It's kind of like if something goes away for long enough, then people get used to not having it.
Yes.
And they don't want people to get used to not having Disney World. So even if that means opening at very limited capacity, limited experience, they want people to come back to Disney World. They want people to, you know, continue that, I guess, in a way, that addiction, you know, to coming to the parks. And if they leave it closed long enough, people might start to think, you know what? I haven't been to Disney in 6 months, but I don't really miss it as much as I thought I would. And maybe I'll spend my money on something else or I'll travel somewhere else. And they want to get people back as soon as possible.
Yeah. And I think this is sort of a stress test on American consumerism a little bit too. Like, and we saw the phased reopening that included Disney Springs that we talked about last time. And it's kind of interesting to hear. He talks a little bit about the Disney Springs reopening.
I don't think so. And I'll tell you, we've got a couple data points that are very encouraging. Number one is we still have a tremendous number of reservations that are on our books for the future. And guests have had the ability to cancel now for quite some time. So that plus the response that we've gotten, not only in Shanghai, where we opened up a few weeks ago, but also from Disney Springs. Our receptivity has been tremendous. Particularly today, we went and opened up our owned and operated stores and restaurants inside Disney Springs, and the demand has been really, really encouraging. So I think the world is ready to get back to some magic, and Disney certainly can provide that magic.
Ah, there's the key word. There's magic, the M word.
Magic.
Yep. Do you believe in magic? I don't know. I believe in magic. I don't know if I believe Bob J. Peck.
Is Disney Springs really that encouraging? Well, he does say a key thing there, that the Disney-owned stuff at Disney Springs previously had not been opened. Mm. So it was just the third-party stuff that was open with the initial opening of Disney Springs.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So when he kind of gave the specific of when we opened, you know, the big World of Disney and the other Disney-owned things that just opened, he's saying there was a good response. So I don't know. I can't go there. I live far enough away that I can't just drive over to Disney Springs.
Yeah.
I see the reports. I've seen, you know, I think people are purposely trying to over dramatize the emptiness of it, kind of like they did with Galaxy's Edge.
I was going to say, this is all too familiar a narrative.
They're trying, you know, they take certain pictures, you know, at the right time and in certain areas where it looks like it's completely empty. Then I've seen other people, you know, doing video walking around. It seems like there's a decent amount of people there. I've seen lines at certain restaurants. So it is interesting to see the coverage of it and kind of what do you really believe. But I think he does. He's probably overselling it, the success, a little bit, because he's not only talking to the consumer right now, he's also talking to the shareholders.
Yes, exactly.
And anyone that's investing, and he wants people to feel confident right now.
Yeah, like you literally hear these sort of financial buzzwords that he's spitting out when he's talking about profitability and meeting cost and like that I think those are specifics I'm sure that investors are looking at when they're planning whether or not Disney's a safe stock to hold or maybe get rid of and revisit, you know, years down the line to see if it's, you know, stabilized. But yeah, I think that it does, I think, show a level of commitment in the positive sense. It's a level of commitment to the business, and I don't mean this in a cynical financial sense. I do mean it like Disney knows exactly what they're there to do, and they're really good at it. And their step, it does. I get the sense they're saying we're willing to step forward and balance caution, sure, but we aren't going to sacrifice this business, this brand, these experiences on the altar of caution. And so I do get that sense that they are pressing forward sooner, not only with the dates, but with the measures that they're taking here.
Right. One of the interesting things that I was kind of wondering how they're going to handle is how do you get into the park? You know, how are they deciding if they're going to limit capacity? How are they going to decide who gets first dibs? And they're starting to kind of reveal a little bit around that. They are... You know, they did currently, you cannot buy a ticket to go to Disney World.
Yeah.
No. But the people that already had tickets will be able to attend or be able to access the reservation system. We just don't know the details around how that's going to work.
Yes, exactly.
So there does seem to be, and I know DVC members as well will have the ability to make reservations. So there's going to be this kind of tiered, I guess, approach when it comes to who can go into the parks first.
Yes. I remember college. I remember how you sign up for classes. All the seniors get first access, right? So, same for all the Disney Club vacation members, current ticket holders. I mean, it makes sense. Hey, guess who's pretty light? Guess who's got standing tickets? Yours truly. Well, both of us. So we're kind of lucked out in that way, where we have the ability, at least, hopefully, to be in the early reservation tiers, but it's just a matter of like when we would actually go. Is this reopening honest question, Aaron? What's the likelihood? How possible is it for you to be tempted into a summer fling with the mouse and heading down to the reopening at some point in like July, August? Because I know you originally looking at a fall trip with the fam, but is this tempting you in any way?
Not really, honestly. I think I'm gonna observe this one from afar and kind of see how this initially goes.
Yeah,
I'm curious if I was a local and I could just kind of stop by and give it a shot. But the fact that I'd have to really go out of my way to travel there.
Yeah, you have to brave both an airport and a plane to get there.
You know, it's quite an investment to only have, you know, a really odd experience at Disney that maybe doesn't, you know, reach my expectations. So I think I'll wait. And I do have plans currently. I do have plans to go to Disney sometime in October. Mm-hmm. So I had kind of finalized those plans maybe about a week ago.
Okay.
And started to make some reservations. And it's interesting because I originally was going to go in November. And then I was like, based on some other factors, I was like, you know what, let's just pick a date in October and let's just go ahead and get some flights and make some reservations. So I did it. I pulled the trigger.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I have, so I started to book other things like food reservations, like, well, Oga's Cantina is tough to get, so I should probably reserve it now. So I went ahead and booked Oga's Cantina for a day. But then I stopped and I was like, you know what? It's really far out. Let me give it some time because I'm not even sure what parks I'll go to, which days, all of that. So I stopped making reservations for food. Well, lo and behold, now they've shut down all food reservations.
Oh, wow.
So even as far out as October, I can't go in and make a reservation for any food. I can't buy tickets to Mickey's Not So Scary. All of that stuff was open as of last week.
Yeah.
And now they've closed it down, I guess, with this announcement. So I don't know if, you know, come July 11th, they start to open the stuff back up or when they will. But, you know, even if you're traveling as far out as, you know, the fall, October, November, you still can't make early plans like you typically would.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It'll be interesting to track and see exactly how they go about it. And I know we did also talk about, you listed this in our notes earlier in previous episodes. We were like, is Disney going to require masks? You better believe it. So it's all guests will undergo. Well, as long as you're over three, anyone over three is going to be required to wear appropriate face covering in the theme parks. And common areas of resorts, and all guests will undergo temperature screenings prior to entering the park. So all of the above.
Yes. And I will say this, like me going in October, that's still pushing the limits for my wife's her comfort level going to Disney right now with all of this stuff going on. She's kind of like, wait, what? You want to go in October? Like, what if stuff still, you know, what if there's like a second wave, or what if stuff's still bad then? I don't know if I want to expose the family to that stuff, you know, with the big crowds and all of that. And I'm like, you know, so definitely I think July, August would be way too early for her. But October even is still, she's still a little nervous about it. So
that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aaron, was there anything else that I missed in our rundown from the initial announcement?
I don't think so. No, I think we hit mainly, there were the only other things like, the certain, like what they call, high touch experiences.
Yeah.
Like the makeovers that they do, playgrounds, character meet and greets, that stuff's going to also be put on hold until further notice. So you can't go to Disney and get a picture, you know, with Mickey, you know, with your arm around Mickey. You can go and Mickey will be there. They say the characters will still be there, but you're not going to be able to do the character meet and greets, which, you know, is a big part of some people's trip to Disney. So, you know, that these early days, if you're going to go, you're going to have a pretty limited experience.
It's
really going to see the people that go this early are going to be the people that are a little bit more the diehards, the people that have the annual passes, the people that love to go to Disney. It's part of their lifestyle. But the casual tourist Disney goers are probably going to wait this one out.
I really think you're spot on, Aaron. I because I count myself amongst the the hardcore, and I definitely am going to try to go at some point in the summer, or late summer, if possible, obviously, but almost out of this sort of morbid curiosity of what a I want to kind of pair the experience of like, well, hey, there's no fireworks show, but look, there's absolutely no crowds and you can walk around freely. Like, I kind of want to see what that experience would be like. So, but again, that's out of my sort of own curiosity.
You want to get the experience. Yeah. You want to go for the story of it, you know, the t-shirt.
I went
to Disney during the commemorative COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. The commemorative face mask. That
right.
Sure,
yeah. I can see that appeal there. I mean, like I said, if I was a local or if I was single, my life was different, you know, I might be a little bit more likely to say, you know what? Yeah, let's go check it out. Let's go see what this is all about. But
yeah,
right now it just doesn't make sense for me to make a trip down there probably until I take the whole family in the fall.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, before we part, let's go ahead and sneak in this, the segment that we've been doing on the past few shows. I've been really enjoying it. It's just Disney Plus, what you've been up to on it, especially in the era of social distancing and self-isolation and emotional heartbreak. I mean, sorry. but seriously, like, as we are all watching our streaming services way more than we typically do, I'll jump off right here and say, just brand new on Disney Plus is Walt Disney Zenimation. Emphasis on the Zen, Z-E-N. It is a series of ambient Disney experiences. I don't even know how to describe it. It's basically they take footage and clips of certain themes, water, for example, and then they basically populate the screen with these really peaceful background images and put in music like Moana, the Moana soundtrack for the water one. And it's just really beautiful. And you see all this classic Disney footage. And it kind of reminds me of this YouTube channel that I've been a longtime fan of called Ambient World. It's great for like productivity. It takes different IP, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Disney. It actually has a good number on the Disney parks. And it just kind of plays music and shows ambient footage related to these different environments. That's perfect to just put on in the background when you're studying, working, what have you. So Disney seems to recognize the popularity of this genre on YouTube, and they've made their own sort of proprietary one, Zenimation. It's pretty cool.
Cool. I have to say, I haven't been really doing the Disney Plus thing recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've been busy, and I think so. My thing, I'll say then, because this is what ends up happening for me with Disney Plus right now.
Yeah,
is it has become a partial babysitter.
Ah,
so when I'm working full time from home, and my children are home with me while my wife is working outside of the house, and so when they're home and I'm, you know, trying to work on their schoolwork with them, I've been trying to turn on some like educational stuff for my son.
Okay.
So we've been kind of looking at the National Geographic stuff and, you know, the different documentaries, mainly about like animals and stuff. He loves to watch anything to do with dogs. So we've been watching some of that stuff. So that's a good, you know, if you want to utilize Disney Plus in an educational way.
Yeah.
There is a lot of content where you can kind of babysit your kids a little bit with Disney Plus, but not feel bad about it. So I would highly recommend checking out. I mean, most people probably wouldn't think, oh, yeah, I'm going to Disney Plus to watch, you know, a nature documentary. But they actually have a lot of really cool content there because of the National Geographic content. And then they have some of the, you know, Disney nature documentaries as well. So those
are also
cool.
Great, like, background footage to put on. I totally forgot to mention, too, I probably should have led with it, is the movie from last night. It was my wife Savannah's birthday. She picked movie night, and it was on Disney Plus. I saw Holes with Shia LaBeouf for the first time.
I love that movie.
Never seen it before.
I love that movie.
Right? It's a great movie.
It's so good. It's such a good movie, and it was an unexpected surprise. I mean, I watched it years ago, but I remember when it first came out in theaters, and I was like, yeah, whatever. That's not something I'd ever watch. And I forget why I watched it. I think my little sister wanted to watch it or something. And I watched it, and I just love that movie. It's so funny.
It's great. I was surprised. But it was definitely a hit here in the household. So it was a great little birthday movie night. It was great. So yes, highly recommended. Folks, you know what this means. I'm going to say it's time to wrap up another episode of the Mouse and Castle podcast. Hey, stay in contact between shows. You can follow us on social media. It's at Mouse and Castle on Instagram and Twitter. Great places to follow us. Also, sign up for the Mouse and Castle newsletter. It's been dormant for a few weeks, but it'll be coming back next week, especially as we get more details on this reopening plan that they've submitted. So make sure you subscribe. It's all available at mouseandcastlepodcast.com. That's where you can also find the show notes for this episode. And all the links to the stories we've been talking about. In this case, all the notes that Aaron, you did some awesome breakdown of pretty much everything we know so far about the reopening of the park. So check that out in our show notes. If you enjoy the show, share it with a friend. Leave us a rating and review on your podcatcher of choice, especially, of course, Apple Podcasts. It's where most of you guys listen. But if you're a Spotify fan, make sure you give us a follow on Spotify. And make sure you listen to the show there as well. So every little way that you spread the word about the show helps us out. Aaron, tell the good people where they can find you on the internet.
You can find me on Twitter, at AVGoins.
Nice. Awesome. Super easy. And then you can find me, of course, at The Riley Guy. That's where you want to go. Super easy. And until next time, may the magic of reopening be in your heart. We'll finally get to do Mickey Minnie's Runaway Railway. That'd be cool.
You should have gone all like Bob Chapek on that.
I made the magic
of your magic be magically magical.
And we're out. And we're out.
That music gets into some heavy electric guitar.
It does really towards the end. That's why I lean heavy on the beginning of the song, because it's much more.